I have a gift for a very primitive form of prophecy, Althea explained. I wanted to learn what I could about it, while my sister wished to learn about cures and such. I also wanted to learn things about people like you. Me? Jensen said. What do you mean? The ancestors of Darkin Rall were no different than he. They all eliminated any ungifted offspring they discovered had been born. Lathea and I were young and full of fire to help those in need, and also those we felt were unjustly persecuted. We wanted to use our gift to help change the world for the better. While we each hoped to study different things, we both went for much the same reasons. Jensen thought that seemed pretty close to how she felt, and was just the kind of help she was talking about. But she also knew that right then was not the moment to say it. She asked instead, "Why did you have to travel all the way to the Palace of the Prophets to learn these things?" "The sorceresses there are renowned to have experience with many things, with wizards and magic, and most of all with matters to do with this world and with the worlds beyond." "Worlds beyond?" Jensen gestured to the space outside the outer gilded ring on the grace, setting not far away. "You mean the world of the dead?" Althea leaned back as she reflected. "Well, yes, but not exactly. You understand the grace?" Althea waited for Jensen's nod. "The sorceresses at the Palace of the Prophets have knowledge about the interactions of the gift, the veil between worlds, and their interdependent relationships, how it all fits together. They are called the Sisters of the Light." Jensen recalled with a jolt that Sebastian had said that the Sisters of the Light were with Emperor Jagang now. Sebastian had offered to take Jensen to the Sisters of the Light. He'd said he thought they might be able to help her. It had to be that they had something to do with the Creator's Light, and especially the gift in the center of the grace. Another thought came to her. "This has something to do with what Lathea said? That you could see the holes in the world, as she called it?" Althea smiled with the pleasure of a teacher seeing a student flirting with discovery. "That's the tip of the tooth. You see, the ungifted offspring of the Lord Rall, of every Lord Rall going back thousands of years, are different than anyone else. You are holes in the world to those of us with the gift." "What does that mean exactly? Holes in the world?" "We are blind to you."
"Blind?
But you see me. Lathea could see me too. I don't understand." "Not blind with our eyes, blind with our gift." She swept an arm out toward Friedrich at the fire with an iron kettle, and then toward the window. "There are living things all around. You see them with your eyes. You see Friedrich and the trees and such just as I do, just as everyone does." She held up a finger to make her point. "But through my gift, I also see them. While our eyes may perceive you, those of us with the gift cannot see you with that aspect of ourselves. Darkin Rall could not see you any more than I can. Neither can the new Lord Rall. To those of us with the gift, you are a hole in the world."
But,
Jensen stammered in confusion. "That makes no sense. He's been hunting me. He sent men after me. They had my name on a piece of paper." "They may hunt you, but only in the conventional sense. They cannot find you with magic. His gift is blind to you. He has to use spies, bribes, and threats to locate you, in addition to his wits and cunning. Were it not so, he might send some magic beast to reap your bones for him and be done with it, instead of sending men out with your name written down on a piece of paper."
"You mean I'm already invisible to him?"
"No. I know you. I remember your red hair. I recognized you because I remember your mother, and you look like her. I know you in those ways, the ways anybody knows and recognizes someone. Darkin Rall, were he alive, might recognize you if he remembered your mother. Others who knew him might well see some of him in you, as I do, in addition to your mother's looks. He could know you in all those same ways common to one without the gift. He can find you by ordinary means. Of course, if he or one with the gift were to actually lay eyes on you,
they would realize you are an ungifted offspring of Aral, because they could see you. But he could not find you with magic. That he cannot do. To those of us with the gift, you are in many ways like everyone else, except you are a hole in the world. Jensen was frowning. She only realized it when Althea tapped her thumbs together, thinking, in response to that face. When I was at the Palace of the Prophets, Althea finally said, I knew a woman there, a sorceress like me, named Addie. She had traveled alone to the old world from a far-off land in order to learn what she could. But Addie was blind. Blind? She could travel alone when she was blind? Althea smiled at the memory of the woman. Oh, yes. With the use of her gift rather than her eyes. All sorceresses, all people with the gift, have unique abilities. On top of that, in some the gift is stronger. Like people who have big muscles are stronger than me, like Friedrich. He is stronger in muscles. You have hair like other people, but yours is red. Some have blonde, or black, or brown. Despite what things people have in common, each person has different attributes. It's like that with the gift. It's not only different in its aspects, but the power of those aspects differ. With some, it's very strong. With some, weak. Each of us is an individual. We're all unique in our ability, our gift, the same as you are unique in other ways. And what about your friend Addie? Ah, well. Addie's eyes were completely white, blind, but she had learned the trick of seeing with her gift. The gift told her more about the world around her than my eyes told me. Addie could see people better with her gift than I could with my eyes. Much like when people who don't have the gift go blind, they depend more on their hearing, so they learn to hear more than you or I. Addie did that with her gift. She saw by sensing that infinitesimal spark of the Creator's gift that everything has, life itself and more, creation. The point is that, to me, to Darken Rall, to Addie, you do not exist. You are a hole in the world. For reasons Jensen could not at first comprehend, terror washed through her, and then the sense of her terror began to take shape. She could feel her eyes filling with tears. The Creator didn't give me life like everyone else? I came to exist in some other way? I'm some kind of monster? My father wanted to have me killed because I'm some monstrosity of nature? No, no, child. Althea said as she leaned forward and stroked a comforting hand down Jensen's hair. That is not at all what I mean. Jensen tried mightily to contain the new shape of dread. Through watery vision, she saw Althea's concerned face gazing down at her. I'm not even part of creation. That's why the gift can't sense me. The Lord Rall only wanted to rid the world of an error of nature, an evil thing. Jensen, don't put words where I have not. Listen to me now. Jensen nodded as she wiped under her eyes. I'm listening. Just because you're different, that doesn't make you evil. Just what am I then, if not a monster untouched by creation? My dear child, you are a pillar of creation. But you said, I said that those with the gift cannot see you with it. I did not say that you don't exist, or that you are not as the rest of us, a part of creation. Then why am I one of those things, one of those holes in the world? Althea shook her head. I don't know, child. But our lack of knowledge does not prove something evil. An owl can see at night. Does it make you evil because people can't see you while the owl can? One person's limitations don't confer wickedness on another. It shows only one thing, the existence of limitations. But all the offspring of the Lord Rall are like this? She considered carefully before answering. The genuinely ungifted ones, yes. Those who are born with at least some tiny aspect of the gift are not. That aspect can be so infinitesimal and unusable that it would not even be recognized to exist by anyone in any other way aside from this one. For all practical purposes, those offspring would be thought of as ungifted. except that they would have this quality that would keep them from being like you, holes in the world. It also makes them vulnerable. This kind of offspring can be found with magic and thus eliminated. Could it be that most of the offspring of Lord Rawl are like that? And those like me, holes in the world, are actually the ones who are more rare? Yes, Althea admitted quietly. Jensen sensed an undercurrent of tension in the single-word answer. Are you suggesting that there is something more to all of this than just that we are holes in the world to the gifted? Yes. That was one of the reasons I went to study with the Sisters of the Light. I wanted to better understand the interrelationship of the gift with life as we know it, with creation. Did you discover anything? Were the Sisters of the Light able to help you? Unfortunately, no. Althea gazed off in reflection. Few, if any, would agree with me, but I have come to suspect that all people, with the single exception of those like you, offspring of a Lord Rawl born wholly without the gift, have this imperceptible spark of magic that, while intangible in every other way, connects them to the gifted, and thus to the greater world of creation. I don't understand what this would mean for me or for anyone else. Althea slowly shook her head. There is more to this, Jensen, than I know. I suspect there is something far more important involved. Jensen couldn't imagine what that could be. How many offspring are born entirely without the gift? As far as I've learned, it's exceedingly rare for more than one offspring of each Lord Rawl to be born with the gift, as we think of it. His seed conceives but one true heir. Althea held up a finger as she leaned forward. But it is possible that, while the others are ungifted in the conventional sense, many have this otherwise invisible and sterile spark of the gift, so that they are detected and destroyed before others, like me, know of them. It is entirely possible that those like you are the ones who are truly rare, as is the single formally gifted heir, and that's why you survived for those like me to notice, thus slanting our idea of which kind is rare and which is common. As I said, I think there is far more to this than I know or can understand. But of those truly like you, devoid of even this otherwise imperceptible glimmer of the gift, all are pillars of creation, Jensen said sarcastically. Althea chuckled. Perhaps that sounds better. But to the gifted, we are holes in the world. Althea's smile withered. It is so. Were Addie here, blind as she is with her eyes and seeing only with her gift, were you to stand before her, she would see everything but you. She would be blind to you. To Addie, able to see with the gift only, you would truly be a hole in the world. That doesn't make me feel very good about myself. Althea's smile returned. Don't you see, child? It proves only the limitation. To one who is blind, everyone is a hole in the world. Jensen thought it over. Then, it's only a matter of perception. Some people are simply lacking the ability to perceive me in one narrow way. Althea gave her a single nod. That's right. But because those with the gift often use their ability without conscious thought, like you use your vision, it's very disturbing to those with the gift to encounter one such as you. Disturbing? Why is it disturbing? It's troubling when your senses do not agree. But they can still see me, so why do I trouble them? Well, imagine if you heard a voice, but you could see no source for it. Jensen didn't have to imagine that. She understood quite well how troubling that was. Or imagine, the sorceress said, if you could see me, but when you reached out to touch me, your hand passed through me, as if I wasn't here. Wouldn't that trouble you? I suppose, Jensen conceded. Is there anything else about us that's different? Other than that we are holes in the world to those with a gift? I don't know. It's exceedingly rare to come across one such as you who is still alive. While it's possible that others exist, and I once heard a rumor that one lived with the healers, called the Rog Moss, I only know of you for certain. When Jensen had been very young, she had visited the healers, the Rog Moss, with her mother. Do you know the name? Drayfan was the name whispered, but I don't know if it's true. Even if it is, the likelihood of him still being alive would be remote. The Lord Rahl is the Lord Rahl. He is his own law. Darkin Rahl, like most of his ancestors, probably fathered many children. Hiding the knowledge of such a child's paternity is dangerous. Few would risk it. So most of your kind were known and immediately put to death. The rest are eventually found. Thinking out loud, Jensen asked, Could it be we're like this as a form of protection? There are animals that have special traits when they're born that help them survive. Fawns, for example, have spots to hide them, to make them invisible to predators, make them holes in the world. Althea smiled at the notion. I suppose that could be as good an explanation as any. Knowing magic, though, I would expect the reason to be more complex. Everything seeks balance. The deer and the wolves strike a balance. The fawns' spots help them survive, but that threatens the existence of wolves who need food. Such things go back and forth. If the wolves ate all the fawns, then the deer would die out and the wolves, if they had no other source of food, would also die out because they had altered the balance between them and the deer. They coexist in a balance that allows both species to survive, but at the cost of some individuals. With magic, balance is critical. What on the surface may seem simple often turns out to have much more complex causes. I suspect that, with those like you, an elaborate form of balance is being struck, and that being a hole in the world is merely an ancillary indication. And maybe some of the balance is that, like some fawns are caught despite their spots, some with a gift are able to see me. Your sister said you could see the holes in the world. No, I can't really. I simply learned a few tricks with the gift, in much the same way Addie did. Jensen frowned, feeling bewildered again. So Althea asked, Can you see a bird on a moonless night? No. If there's not even a moon, it's impossible. Impossible? No, not entirely. Althea pointed skyward, moving her hand as if suggesting something passing overhead. You will see the stars go dark where the bird passes. If you watch the holes in the sky, you will, in a way, be seeing the birds. Just a different way of seeing. Jensen smiled at such a clever notion. So that's how you see those like me? That comparison is the easiest way I can explain it to you. Both, though, have limitations. It only works to see the bird at night if they're flying against a background of stars, if there are no clouds, and so on. With those like you, it's much the same. I simply learned a trick to help me see those like you, but it's very limited. When you went to the Palace of the Prophets, did you learn about your ability for prophecy? Maybe that could somehow help with what I need to do? Nothing in relation to prophecy would be of any use to you. But why not? Althea tilted her head forward, as if to question whether or not Jensen had been paying attention. Where does prophecy come from? Prophets. And prophets are strongly gifted with that ability. Prophecy is one form of magic. But the gifted cannot see you with their gift, remember? To them, you are a hole in the world. Therefore, prophecy, since it comes through prophets, cannot see you either. I have a wisp of ability for prophecy, but I am no prophet. When I was with the Sisters of the Light, since such things were one of my fields of interest, I spent decades in their vaults studying prophecy. They had been written down by great prophets throughout the ages. I can tell you both from personal experience and from all that I read that the prophecies are as blind to you as would be Addie. As far as the prophecies are concerned, your kind never existed, do not exist now, and never will exist. Jensen sat back on her heels. Hole in the world indeed. At the Palace of the Prophets, I met a prophet, Nathan, and, while I learned nothing about those like you, I learned some about my talent. Mostly, I only learned how limited it is. Eventually, the things I learned there came to haunt me.
What do you mean?
The Palace of the Prophets was created many thousands of years ago and is like no other place that I know of. A unique spell surrounds the entire palace and grounds. It distorts the way in which those under the spell age.
It changed you then in some way?
Oh, yes. It changes everyone. Aging is slowed for those living under the spell of the Palace of the Prophets, while those outside the palace went about their lives and aged roughly 10 to 15 years, those of us in the palace aged only 1 year.
Jensen made a skeptical face.
How could such a thing be?
Nothing ever stays the same. The world is always changing. The world back in the Great War 3,000 years ago was much different. The world has changed since then. When the Great Barrier to the south of Dahara was put up, wizards were different. They had vast power back then.
Darkin Rahl had vast power?
No. Darkin Rahl, as powerful as he was nothing compared to the wizards of that time. They could control powers Darkin Rahl only dreamed of.
So wizards like that, with that kind of vast power, all died out? There have been no wizards like them born since?
Althea stared off as she answered in a grave tone. Not since that great war has there been one like that born. Even wizards themselves have come to be born less and less often. But for the first time in 3,000 years, one has again been born. Your half-brother Richard is such a man.
It turned out her pursuer was far more fearsome than Jensen had given him credit for. Even in her all-too-vivid imagination, small wonder that her mother had been murdered and Lord Rawl's men were so close on Jensen's heels. This Lord Rahl was altogether more powerful and dangerous than had been their father. Because this was such an epical event, some of those at the Palace of the Prophets knew of Richard long before he was born. There was much anticipation over this one, this war wizard.
War wizard?
Jensen didn't like the sound of that.
Yes, there was much controversy as to the meaning of the prophecy of his birth, even to the meaning of the term war wizard. While at the palace, I had a chance on 2 brief occasions to meet the prophet I mentioned, Nathan. Nathan Rahl.
Jensen's mouth fell open.
Nathan Rahl? You mean a real Rahl?
Althea smiled not only at the memory, but at Jensen's surprise.
Oh, yes, a real Rahl. Commanding, powerful, clever, charming, and inconceivably dangerous. They kept him locked away behind impenetrable shields of magic, where he could cause no harm, yet he sometimes managed it. Yes, a real Rahl. Over 900 years old, he was, too.
That's impossible, Jensen insisted before she had time to think better of it. Friedrich, standing over her, harumphed. He handed a steaming cup of tea to his wife and then passed one down to Jensen. With the question in her eyes, Jensen looked back at Althea.
I am close to 200 years old, Althea said.
Jensen just stared. Althea looked old, but not that old.
In part, this business with my age and how the spell slowed my aging is how I came to have dealings with you and your mother when you were young.
Althea sighed heavily and took a sip of tea.
Which brings me back to the story at hand, to what you wanted to know, why I cannot help you with magic.
Jensen sipped, then glanced up at Friedrich, who looked about as old as Althea.
Are you that age too?
No, he jibed. Althea robbed the cradle for me.
Jensen saw the looks that passed between them, the kind of intimate glances between two people who were close. Jensen could see in the eyes of these two that they could read each other's slightest expression. She and her mother had been like that, able to see thoughts in the slightest movement of the eyes of the other. It was the kind of communication she thought was facilitated not only through familiarity, but through love and respect.
I met Friedrich when I returned from the old world. I had aged only about the same as Friedrich. I had lived a much longer time, of course, but my body had not aged to show it because I had been under the spell of the palace of the prophets. When I came back, I became involved in a number of things, and one of them was how I might help those such as you.
Jensen hung on every word.
That's when you met my mother?
Yes. You see, the spell at the palace, the spell that altered time, sparked an idea of how I might help those like you. I knew that regular means of casting webs, magic, around your kind never seemed to work out. Others had tried but failed. The offspring were killed. I struck on the idea instead to cast the web not on you, but on those who came into contact with you and your mother.
Jensen leaned forward expectantly, feeling sure that she was finally getting to the core of what might prove to be the help she sought.
What did you do? What sort of magic?
I used magic to alter people's perception of time itself.
I don't understand. What did that do?
Well, the only way Dark and Rawl could search for you was, as I've explained, by using regular means. I tinkered with those regular means. I made it so that those who knew of you perceived time differently.
I still don't understand. How, what did you make them perceive? Time is time.
Althea leaned forward with a cunning smile.
I made them think you were just born.
When?
All the time. Whenever they found out some thread of news about you, as a child fathered by Dark and Rawl, they perceived you and reported you as newborn. When you were 2 months, 10 months, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years old, they were still looking for a newborn, despite how long they had known of you. The spell slowed their perception of time in relation to you alone, so that they were always looking for a newborn baby, rather than a girl growing up. In this way, until you were 6, I hid you right under their noses. That threw everyone's calculations off by 6 years. To this day, anyone who suspected your existence would believe you to be around 14 or so, when you were actually more than 20, because they thought you were newborn when the spell ended when you were 6. That's when they began to mark your age.
Jensen rose up onto her knees.
But that could work. You must only do it again. If you were to cast a spell like that for me now, like you did when I was little, it would work the same, wouldn't it? Then they wouldn't know I was grown up. They wouldn't be hunting me. They would be looking for a newborn. Please, Althea, just do that again. Do what you did once before.
From the corner of her eye, Jensen saw Friedrich, now sitting at his bench in a back room, turn away. By the look on Althea's face, Jensen knew that she had somehow said the wrong thing, and precisely what the sorceress had planned on her saying. Jensen realized that this had been a trap of sorts, and she had just talked herself right into it.
I was young and masterful in my skill with magic, Althea said. In her dark eyes glimmered the spark of recollection of that grand time in her life. In thousands of years, few had been through the Great Barrier and back. I had. I had studied with the Sisters of the Light, had audiences with their prelate, and with the great prophet. I had accomplished such things as few others had. I was well over 100 years old and still young, with a handsome and charming new husband who believed I could walk to the moon and back if the fancy struck me. I was well over 100 years of age, yet still youthful, with a full life ahead of me, wise with age, yet still young. I was clever, oh so clever, and powerful in my gift. I was experienced, knowledgeable, and attractive, with many friends and a circle of people who hung on my every worldly pronouncement.
With long, graceful fingers, Althea pulled up the hem of her skirt, uncovering her legs. Jensen drew back at the sight. She saw then why Althea had not stood before. Her legs were withered, deformed, shriveled bones covered with a dry veneer of pallid flesh, as if they had died years ago but never been buried because the rest of her was still living. Jensen didn't know how the woman could keep from screaming in constant anguish.
You were six, the sorceress said in a terribly calm and quiet voice, when Darkon Rall finally discovered what I had done. He was a very ingenious man, much more shrewd, as it turned out, than a young sorceress of 100-odd years in age. I only had time to tell my sister to warn your mother before he caught me. Jensen remembered running. When she was little, she and her mother had fled the palace. It had been night. It had been shortly after a visitor had come to their door. In the dark hall, there had been whispering, and then they had fled.
But he didn't kill you? Jensen swallowed. He showed you mercy? He spared your life?
Althea chuckled without humor. It was an empty laugh at encountering a profoundly naive notion. Darkon Rall did not always believe in simply killing those who displeased him. He preferred instead that they should live a good long time. Death would have been a release, you see. If they were dead, how could they regret? How could they suffer? How could they serve as an example to others? You cannot imagine, and I could not begin to tell you the terror of such a capture, of the long walk to be taken before him, of what it was like being in the grip of that man, of what it was like to look up into his calm face, his cold blue eyes, and know you were at the mercy of a man who had none. You cannot imagine what it was like to know in that single terrible instant that everything you were, everything you had, everything you had hoped for in life, was about to forever change. The pain was what you might expect, I suppose. Perhaps my legs can partly attest to it.
I'm so sorry, Jensen whispered through her tears, hands pressed over her heartache.
But the pain was not the worst of it. Not the worst by far. He stripped me of everything I had but took for granted. He did to my power, to my gift, worse than he did to my legs. You just cannot see it. You are blind to it. Every day I see it. That hurt, I assure you, you cannot begin to imagine. Even all that, though, was not enough for Darkon Rall. His displeasure at what I had done to hide you had only begun. He banished me here to this sunken, foul place of hot springs and sickening vapors. He imprisoned me here, filling in about me a swamp with monstrosities created by the very power he had stripped from me. He wanted me close, you see. Several times he visited, just to behold me in my prison. I'm at the mercy of those things out there that are given life by my own gift, a gift to which I no longer have access. I could never drag myself out by my arms alone, but even if I were to try, or if I had the help of another, those beasts created from my own power would rip me apart. I can't call them back even to save myself. He left a path in the front, so that provisions and supplies could be brought in, so I would be sure to have the things I needed. Friedrich had to build a home for us here, because I cannot ever leave. Darkon Rall wished me a long life, life I could spend suffering for displeasing him. Jensen trembled as she listened, unable to say anything. Althea lifted a hand to point with one long, graceful finger toward the back room. That man who loves me had to witness it all. Friedrich was thus condemned to a life of tending to a crippled wife he loved, who could no longer be a wife to him in ways of the flesh. She ran a hand over her bony limbs tenderly, as if seeing them as they once were. I have never again had the joy of being with my husband, as a woman is with a man. My husband never again was able to share and enjoy the intimate charms of the woman he loves. She paused to regain her composure, before going on. As part of my punishment, Darkon Rall left me with the power to use my gift in the one way which would haunt me every day. Prophecy. Jensen could not help herself from asking, thinking, that this must be one thread of possible comfort left to the woman. It's part of your gift. Can't it bring you some joy?
dark eyes fixed on her again. "Did you enjoy the last day with your mother, the day before she died?"
"Yes,"
Jensen finally said. "Did you laugh and talk with her?"
"Yes."
"What if you had known that the next day she was to be murdered? What if you saw it all long before it happened, days, weeks, or even years before, knew what was to happen, when, every ghastly detail, saw, by the power of your magic, the horrifying sight of it, the blood, the agony, the dying? Would that please you? Would you still have experienced that joy, that laughter?"
Jensen answered in a small voice,
"No."
"So you see, Jensen Rall, I cannot help you, not because I am selfish, as you put it, but because even if I were willing, I have no power left to cast you a spell. You must find within yourself the ability to help yourself, the free will to accomplish what you must. Only in that way can you truly succeed in life. I cannot give you a spell to solve your problems. I have spent a good deal of my life suffering for the last spell I cast for you. Were it only me, I would endure it willingly, for I was doing what I believe in. This is the fault of an evil man, not the fault of an innocent child. Yet I suffer each day because it was not just my life forfeit, but Friedrich's too. He might have..."
"I might have nothing."
He had come up behind Jensen. "I have considered each day of my life a privilege, because you are in it. Your smile is the sun, gilded by the Creator himself, and brightens my small existence. If this is the price for all of that I have gained, then I paid it willingly. Don't devaluate the quality of my joy, Althea, by minimizing it or trivializing it." Althea looked back down at Jensen. "You see, this is my daily torture, knowing what I have not been able to do, to be, for this man." Jensen withered, sobbing, at the woman's feet. "Magic," Althea whispered from above, "is trouble you don't need." Chapter 24. Jensen's thoughts were lost in a forlorn fog. The swamp was only there because it was beneath her feet, around her, above her, but her mind was in a more confused and tangled jumble than all the twisted things around her. So much of what she believed had turned out to be wrong. That meant that not only were many of her hopes lost, but her solutions too. Worse yet, Jensen had come face to face with the misery, hardship, and heartbreak her existence had ended up causing others who tried to help her. Through the tears, she could hardly see her way. She moved almost blindly through the mire. She stumbled at times, crawled when she fell, sobbing in racking agony when she paused, supported by the limb of an old, gnarled tree. It was like the day of her mother's murder all over again, the anguish, the confusion, the insanity of it all, the bitter despair, but this time for Althea's tortured life. Staggering through the dense growth, Jensen grasped vines for support as she wept. Since her mother's death, finding the sorceress and getting her help had given Jensen's life a direction, a goal. She didn't know what to do now. She felt lost in the midst of her life. Jensen wound her way through an area where steam rose from fissures. All about her, angry vapor bellowed as it was unleashed from underground in billowing clouds. She plodded past the stench of the boiling vents and back into the thick growth. Thorny bushes scratched her hands, broad leaves slashed at her face. Reaching a dark pool she vaguely remembered, Jensen shuffled along the ledge, gripping rocks for handholds, weeping as she made her way along the brink. Rock crumbled and came away in her hand. She fought to keep her balance as she snatched for another handhold, catching on just in time to keep herself from falling. She gazed over her shoulder, through blurry vision, at the dark expanse of water. Jensen wondered if it might be better, were she to fall, better to be swallowed into the depths and be done with it. It looked a sweet embrace, a gentle end to it all. It looked like the peace she sought. Peace at last. If she could just die there on the spot, the impossible struggle would be over. The heartache and sorrow would be ended. Maybe then she could be with her mother and the other good spirits in the underworld. She doubted, though, that the good spirits took people who murdered themselves. To take a life except to defend life was wrong. If Jensen were to give up all that her mother had done, all her sacrifices would be for nothing. Her mother, waiting in eternity, might not forgive Jensen for throwing her life away. Althea, too, had lost nearly everything to help her. How could Jensen ignore such bravery, not just Althea's, but Friedrich's, too? Despite how miserably responsible she felt, she could not throw her only life away. She felt, though, as if she had stolen Althea's chance at life. Despite what the woman had said, Jensen felt a sense of burning shame for what Althea had suffered. Althea would be imprisoned in this miserable swamp forever, every day paying the price of having tried to hide Jensen from Darken Rall. Jensen's mind might have been telling her that it was Darken Rall's doing, but her own heart said otherwise. Althea would never have her own life back, be free to walk, free to go where she would, free to have the joy of her own gift. What right had Jensen to expect others to help her anyway? Why should others forfeit their life, their freedom, for her sake? What gave her the right to ask such sacrifice of them? Jensen's mother was not the only one to suffer because of her. Althea and Friedrich were chained to the swamp. Lathea had been murdered, and Sebastian was now held prisoner. Even Tom, waiting for her up in the meadow, had set aside earning his living to come to her aid. So many people had tried to help her and paid a terrible price. Where had she ever gotten the idea that she could shackle others to her wishes? Why should they have to relinquish their lives and needs for hers? But how could she go on without their help? Free of the ledge and deep pool, Jensen trudged on through an endless tangle of roots. They seemed to deliberately catch her feet. Twice she fell sprawling. Both times she got up and continued on. The third time she fell, she hit her face so hard the pain stunned her. Jensen ran her fingers over her cheekbone, her forehead, thinking something surely must be broken. She found no blood, no protruding bone. Lying there among the roots like so many snakes coiled all about her, she felt shame for all the trouble she had brought to people's lives. And then she felt anger. Jensen, she recalled her mother's words, don't you ever wear a cloak of guilt because they are evil. Jensen pushed herself up on her arms. How many others might have tried to help those like Jensen, the offspring of a Lord Rall, and paid with their lives? How many more would? Why should they, like Jensen, not have their own lives? It was the Lord Rall who bore the responsibility for lives ruined. Jensen, surrender. Would it never stop? Grushteva, du kalt mischt. Sebastian was only the latest. Was he being tortured that very moment because of her? Was he paying with his life, too, for helping her? Surrender. Poor Sebastian. She felt a pang of longing for him. He had been so good to help her, so brave, so strong. Tu wascht mich, tu wask mich, grüß dir, du kalt mich. The voice, insistent, commanding, echoed around in her head, whispering the words that made no sense. She staggered to her feet. Could she never have her own life, not even her own mind? Must she always be pursued by Lord Rall, by the voice? Jen, leave me be! She had to help Sebastian. She was moving again, putting one foot in front of the other, pushing vines and leaves and branches aside, cutting through the underbrush. The thick mist and dense canopy of leaves made it dark as dusk. She had no idea how late in the day it was. It had taken a lot of time to reach Althea's place. She had been there a long time. For all Jensen knew, it might be near dusk. At best, it could be no earlier than late afternoon. She had hours left before she made it back to the meadow where Tom waited. She had come for help, but that help had been an illusion invented in her own mind. She had relied on her mother her whole life, and then she had expected Althea to help her. She had to accept that it was up to her to do what was necessary to help herself.
Jensen, surrender.
No, leave me alone. She was so very tired of it all. Now she was angry, too. Jensen plunged onward through the swamp, splashing through water, stepping along roots and rocks when they were available. She had to help Sebastian. She had to get back to him. Tom was waiting. Tom would take her back. But what then? How was she going to get him out? She had depended on Althea to help her with some kind of magic. Now she knew there could be no such help. Panting from the effort of running through the swamp, she halted when she came to the expanse of water where the snake had been before. Jensen gazed out at the silent, still expanse of water, but didn't see anything. No roots that were really a snake protruded above the surface. It was getting gloomy. She couldn't tell if anything lurked in the dark shadows beneath leaves drooping over the banks. Sebastian's life hung in the balance. Jensen waded into the water. Halfway in, she remembered that she had promised herself that she was going to take a staff to help keep her balance when she returned through the open water. She paused, debating whether or not she should go back to cut a staff. Going back was just as far as going on, so she kept going. Feeling with her feet, she found a firm bottom of roots, real roots, and carefully stepped along them. Surprisingly, as long as she stayed on the roots, the water came up only to her knees, and she was able to hold up her skirts to keep them dry as she waded through the murky water. Something bumped her leg. Jensen flinched. She saw the flash of scales. Her foot slipped. She saw with heady relief that it was only a fish darting away. Trying to get her balance to regain her footing, Jensen stepped heavily into the bottomless black depths. She had only time for a short gasp before she was under the water. Darkness surrounded her. She saw a swirl of bubbles as she went under. Surprised, she kicked frantically, trying to find bottom, something, anything, to stop her descent. There was nothing. She was in deep water, weighted down by wet clothes. Rather than support her now, her heavy boots dragged her under. Jensen flailed her arms, splashing at the surface just long enough to gasp a breath before she was under again. The shock of it was startling. With all her strength, she moved her arms, trying to swim to the surface, but her clothes were like a net around her, dampening and hampering any effective action. Eyes wide in fright, red hair floating, she could see shafts of the dim light wavering and glittering, piercing the murky depths around her. It was all happening so shockingly fast. In spite of how she was trying to seize life, it was slipping through her fingers. It didn't seem real.
Jensen.
Shapes moved closer around her, her lungs aching for air. Althea said that no one could come through the swamp by the back way. There were beasts back here that would tear people apart. Jensen had been lucky once. In the grip of terror, she saw a dark shape moving closer. She was not to be lucky twice. She didn't want to die. She knew she had thought that she did, but she knew now that she didn't. It was her only life, her precious life. She didn't want to lose it.